Right, we're going to go ahead and get started with session 5. If I could invite you to come on in and get settled. You're almost there. And this last session, actually, I plan this to be mercifully short. It's only going to be about 20 minutes. So we're going for half the length of the others, trying to put you in a position to finish well with enthusiasm. And save some time for some Q&A at the end. I want to call your attention to 1 Thessalonians 5:14. Yes? No. I'm sorry. Thank you for asking. I was asked by the sound team to move up here. They thought it might improve the sound. It's all voodoo to me. I don't understand how it works, so I just go if they tell me to go. Yeah. Is it better now? Okay, good. Sorry for the feedback before. But, okay, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 14. We're going to call this session a handbook for helping. And what I hope to do in this session is to make a modest attempt to provide some frame of reference as you consider very important questions about how to come alongside and help those who are struggling with various manifestations of anxiety. Okay, we're talking about how do you know what kind of care to provide. This session is going to be shorter, as I mentioned before, and it's going to be generalized in large part. So there may be opportunity for some specific questions when we're done. So listen, there's no one-size-fits-all approach in any kind of soul care, let alone a difficult and complex topic like anxiety. So what I want to do in the little bit of time that we have here is try to give you some biblical categories that can provide a framework for understanding how you approach the care that you need to offer, which might differ from person to person. So it's not a one-size-fits-all. Somebody who's experiencing anxiety and worrying may not need... Now, they need the same core truths we covered, but the way that we engage, the manner in which we help, may be different depending on the way that that person is struggling, and we're going to give a biblical rationale for that. So remember, we've restated this in various ways, that key goal that we've clarified is that we want, above all else, to point the person to Jesus in the struggle. We do want the anxiety to go away, but that's a secondary goal. More importantly, we want people to respond in humility as they rejoice in the Lord and worship and grow in their contentment in the Lord, even if difficulties remain. Okay, now, this has been said already, but it's good to clarify that anxiety is not always caused by sinful rebellion. And people are often struggling in ways that are hard for them to see. People are often struggling in ways that they have a hard time making heads or tails of. So very practical questions start to come up, such as, what do I say? Do I say anything? Should I just be present? You hear people talk about the ministry of presence. Not gifts. No, not that kind of presence. Should I hold them accountable? Should I exhort them or call them to action? And how do I know the difference between responses that actually join in and are unhelpfully sympathetic, actually look more like empathy and make matters worse? How do I distinguish between that and responses that are compassionate and careful? What does this person who's struggling need from me? What's the best thing to give them? Now, those are all relevant questions, right? And if you haven't wondered about that, you haven't tried to help very many people or haven't addressed this issue in your own life, these are questions that we have to wrestle with. Okay? So more specific questions may follow, but let's look at 1 Thessalonians 5:14 and try to understand some basic categories that inform the way that we care for others. So you might say this text is a generalized handbook for helping. 1 Thessalonians 5, beginning at verse 14. We urge you, brethren, admonish the unruly, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with everyone. See that no one repays another with evil for evil, but always seek after that which is good for one another and for all people. We're going to dig right in here and make note that the first thing that we see in this text is that providing suitable, and what I mean by suitable is appropriate, it's suitable to their need. Providing suitable soul care requires us to care for one another according to our disposition and needs. According to our disposition and needs. I do not mean that the truth or the content that we've covered, that we've labored to cover, changes depending on a person's attitude. I don't mean that at all. Talking about the way in which you call them to lay hold of that truth. Right? There's one gospel. And the scriptures are clear regarding the issue of anxiety. And we're not talking about adjusting what's true in order to accommodate where somebody's at. We're talking about understanding their frame, understanding how they're struggling and their disposition, and what's the way in which I call them to lay hold of that truth. And that'll depend on their posture, their disposition. First, we see in this text that the unruly, that is the dysfunctional, need to be firmly warned or admonished. Okay? Paul says, admonish the unruly. Some translations say idle, but dysfunctional or unruly is a better translation. And this is referring to the one who's out of line. It's the one who knows the right thing to do, but neglects it. One who refuses to observe God's guidelines. So we can think of a number of issues where this might be the case, but let's think specifically about anxiety. In the case of anxiety, this would be the one who, let's consider two scenarios. One who's clearly making wrong decisions that are creating or compounding their anxiety. So one who is engaged in intentional, willful, sinful behavior that is creating or compounding their anxiety. Such a one should be firmly warned. They know the right thing to do. They're rebelling against God. Their anxiety is directly related to some of these choices that they're making. Okay? I'm generalizing, but you can picture the situation. Somebody's making decisions that's causing a significant amount of trouble for them. They need to be warned. Now, the other possible scenario might be, this is the one who pursues an ungodly way of addressing their anxiety. So one who's trying to alleviate the issue, and we all do. Remember, your anxiety wants to be gotten rid of, and you don't want it around. And the question is, how are we going to do this? The one who engages in sinful, ungodly means willfully to alleviate that anxiety should be firmly warned or admonished. So the person who goes and pursues a relationship outside of their marriage, the person who gets drunk, the person who, you fill in the blank, right? It's drugs, it's pornography, it's whatever it may be. They know better, and they do it anyway. Okay? This one needs to be firmly warned. This one needs to be admonished. That is the way that you address the unruly person, the one who's experiencing anxiety or dealing with their anxiety in a rebellious manner. The way that you call them to lay hold of these truths that are in Scripture is by firmly warning them and calling them to repentance. Okay. Second, we have another category. That's the faint-hearted. Faint-hearted, literal translation is small-souled. And isn't that endearing to think about? Small-souled feller. Yeah. Listen, this one, I don't mean to make light of it. That's sweet sounding. This one needs to be compassionately encouraged. This is what it means to encourage the faint-hearted. The faint-hearted one is that one of small courage. They're not sure of themselves. They're not in open rebellion like the unruly one. They're probably struggling to get things right. They may be weary. They're possibly doubting if they can persevere. They might be having questions about assurance in this. So to encourage them, we think about what this means to encourage them is to draw near to them and put courage in them. come up to them, draw near to them, put courage in them. They should get instruction, all the same instruction that we've given. Again, the content of what we give does not change, right? Talking about the manner in which we call people to lay hold of it. They need instruction, but they need someone to come alongside and give them hope and step up along with them and say, keep going. Keep going. I know you haven't figured this out yet, but as far as I can tell, you're doing everything right. And hey, let me pray with you, right? And let's talk again. Hang in there. See, in anxiety, this may be the one who has fought for a long period of time and is tempted to give up or finds himself doubting the scriptures or the promises of God. They may be teetering towards throwing in the towel. They need to be encouraged and consoled. This refers to a comfort that shows sympathy, and it brings the discouraged one up. Okay? That you have that small-souled one who's struggling to navigate this issue, and you engage with them in such a way that you're bringing them up. You lift them up. You with me? Okay. The third category that this text gives us is the weak. Oh, the weak. The weak or vulnerable, they need to be helped. And what that means is they need to be held up and supported. Paul says you help the weak. The weak is the one without the necessary resources to carry the burden on their own at this time. The weak is the one who does not have the necessary resources, could be for a variety of reasons. They don't have what they need to carry the burden on their own at this time. They are without adequate strength, without the capacity to think and respond well. They're without vigor. They're unable to stand without help is the picture. Right? And this corresponds to what this word help means. It means, so this helping is you correspond to, you come opposite, you hold yourself opposite and against this one, you cleave to, and you carry the weight. You carry the weight. You understand? So you've got the picture of somebody who breaks a leg, and the one or two guys come up, and they get under their arms, and they hold them up, and they help them off the field. Right? This is the kind of help that we're talking about. You have somebody who has the appearance of not being able to get off the field without somebody coming up under and helping them bear the weight. In reference to anxiety, this could be the individual suffering from things like panic attacks or some other severe anxiety disorder. So I would argue that panic attacks are a secondary, they're a second level issue that eventually people are able to appropriate the truths that we've talked about and deal with fears and anxieties and concerns that precede these events. And there is hope and help for those who suffer from panic attacks. It is not a foregone conclusion that it will always be that way. There are underlying fears, concerns, people call them triggers, and all of the truths that we've covered apply to that, and they help with that in a legitimate way. But when somebody's in the middle of a full-blown panic attack, what they need is not for you to say, give a 45-minute lecture on Philippians 4. Okay? What they're going to need is for you to keep it short and sweet and help them to calm down and stay with them and recall some of these same truths, but it's to say, if I'm having a panic attack, you say, Raj, I'm with you. God's with you. I'm praying. I'm right here. The Lord's right here. I'm keeping it short and sweet. I won't go anywhere. It's okay, buddy. It's all right. You understand? You're working towards a place where you're helping them. You're carrying them right now in order to get to a place where you can address those underlying issues. Okay? They need to be at a place where they can think clearly and apply biblical truth to the primary issue that precedes these episodes, but right now they need help calming down. Okay? They need somebody to be with them and comfort them, and then help them begin to take very small steps in the right direction. Does that make sense? Okay. Again, please don't mishear me. I am not suggesting that we're bringing different truth to different people. Same truth, different manner of engagement based on what their needs are according to their disposition and how they're struggling. Okay. Let me ask a question. Why Number two on your outline for this session, why is it important to discern the disposition and needs of the person we're caring for? What happens if we mix these categories up? Aaron? Yeah. So this is important for us to recognize. You don't admonish the weak and the faint-hearted because you might break a bruised reed, right? We don't want to break a bruised reed. We don't want to snuff out a dimly lit wick. And you don't encourage the unruly. That would be enabling them, okay? You don't say, oh, you poor thing. I'm so sorry that you got yourself in this mess again today. That's not how you approach that when somebody's been unruly. You firmly warn them. Otherwise, as Aaron said, you have a reverse effect. You're patting them on the back in their rebellion. So all of these situations, a subtle correction to something that was said is all of these situations may require correction. So we do correct the faint-hearted. We do correct the weak. Okay? But it's going to sound different than the way that we correct the unruly. So when that despairing person is saying, I just can't do this anymore, I am going to correct him. I'm going to say, you know what, in our own strength, we can't. But sweetheart, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, right? And you know what? We're called to work out our salvation with fear and trembling because it's God who's at work in us to will and to work. Thank God that when we're weak, he's strong. So I love you so much, I'm committed to interrupting and correcting that despair. Now, you hear my tone? Okay? I'm not going to break a bruised reed talking to him like that. The correction may still be uncomfortable. And if that's uncomfortable, then so be it. That's love. But the manner of engagement is dictated by their disposition. Okay? Lastly, let's make a point of this, that the text shows us that discipleship requires selflessness and mercy. Soul care for the anxious requires selflessness and mercy. Notice this, okay? According to the text, at the end of verse 14, be patient with everyone. Everyone, even the unruly, require patience and long-suffering. So we might have a false dichotomy in our mind that would say, I'm either patient or I'm admonishing. Do you have a category for admonishing with patience? For a firm warning, and I'm willing to continue to walk with you and continue to warn you and admonish you for as long as it takes if that's where you stay? Be patient with everyone. Be patient with the weak. Be patient with the faint-hearted. And do not repay evil with evil. Now, this is important. And this, if you struggle with anxiety, I want this to speak to you as well as speaking to those who are trying to care for somebody who struggles. When people are struggling with anxiety, the tendency is to become very self-focused and oblivious to that fact. And here's what happens. Their world starts to turn inward, and then they get consumed with self, and that hurts the people around you. That's hurtful to the people around you. When you're preoccupied with yourself, that's taking attention away from people who ought to have your attention at times. And so then that can lead to, when you're caring for somebody who's, let's say they're in a long-standing pattern of struggling with obsessive-compulsive type behavior, and they have a constant preoccupation with self, the rest of the people in their life can feel neglected, and then that leads to a great temptation to become impatient or even justify a bad attitude or a surliness. Right? Come along. Don't repay evil for evil. Be long-suffering and demonstrate the mercy that Christ has shown you. And lastly, we earnestly seek that which is good for others. The greatest good that we can seek for another is to persistently point them to Christ. So even if they ask you to give them something else to accommodate, help them feel better, Don't grow weary of doing good in this way. Don't grow weary, even if the other person is not responding well. They have no greater need than to see Christ in their struggle and entrust themselves to Him. Earnestly seek their good by pointing them to Jesus. Okay? That is a really quick flyover that does not answer hundreds of specific questions. What I hope that does is give you some basic categories to work with where you can answer those questions on your own. Okay? Tom, believe it or not, we ended on time. It's 1:30.